with their Corydon, which is an endangered species nearby, but because this is already a house, an existing structure that's been used, usually we go right through that one rather quick, and we've actually been given a programmable determination from Texas Wildlife that says if it's an existing home, you're going to check that off and go to the next thing. There's also coastal barriers because you're sitting where you are in relation to the bay. We actually have to look at the effect of an existing home to that. Usually, like in this case, just with the endangered species, we have to go through and check off, no, this is an existing home. It is not vacant beyond, you know, vacant land that we are doing reconstruction on. Some of it has already been there. Regardless if the house needs to be raised and rebuilt or elevated.
Christy, going to the fact that we still have to publish it,
This is the checklist. Let us say your home is in a floodplain or in a wetland. We then have to do an 8-step process, which then the home, we have to put it out to the Corps of Engineers, to TCEQ, that says, you know, we have a property that is potentially in, that is in the wetlands, so we need to put it before you, the Corps of Engineers. They then respond back. We then have to publish an early notification, which is a 14-day review, which the public then gets to make comment on this location about putting the home back. These are federal dollars putting back a home in a wetland in a potentially hazardous location. So, by law, we have to do that. Then there's a 7-day review that we have to do on that house, which is a list of alternatives. A no-build option, which is not an acceptable option, as you know. Mitigation, which might elevate the house above the floodplain, or other types of mitigation for flood hazards. So that's a 7-day review for alternatives. And then we have your FONSI, finding no significant impact, and the release of funds that is a 30-day review for those things. Because these are rehabs, all of these are going to go, the last part of that, we actually make a category excluded determination. It goes to the state for their review, and it pretty much gets done there. For anything that is new construction is an environmental assessment because it's new. It's no longer on the fifth, potentially not in the footprint that it was originally to that house, because you might be picking another floor plan for your home. So for that, we'll go to the state, which then turns around right up to Fort Worth to get the determination, which is fairly quick. It's usually a 15-day determination. So that is the law as we have been given by HUD through the state to us.
Well, Elizabeth, is all that included in the 120-day number?
I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay.
And like in some cases, if I knew about
120 days.
Okay. Yes.
Back to the actual application. You mentioned the 55 applications. 43 were
in there.
So those 43 people have some idea of where their application is in the process. Is there a reason why the other 22 can't be contacted? I'm particularly thinking of that you potentially have 13 people who don't realize they don't have completed applications.
We actually do outbound calls to people who don't have completed applications and the system of completing them. So that's a proactive activity that we do from the Housing Assistance Center, which I own. And we go through the incomplete application queue at least once a week or more often, depending on how many applications are in there. So an application should sit more than 5 business days in an unsubmitted status. They'll either delete the application, the applicant will say, oh, I don't want to participate for whatever reason, or they can complete the application over the telephone. They don't even have to come in. So we proactively get those 13 applications cleared out. There are four applications in allocating funds to the program. We have four applications that are that don't meet the low income criteria that we have to do for the national objective, and that are not in the category of what we call severe damage, meaning they have self-reported that their damage is less than our severe threshold. So those folks are waiting until we're sure that we get all of the severe folks taken care of and all of the low-income folks taken care of that's required by our federal requirements. And then we have five who've indicated they're either a mobile home or a condo and they're getting a special review. And that's the whole pipe. So for the most, so I can pretty much say four people are waiting till we're sure we have enough low income to serve everybody because of the 50% of the fund, not 50% of the number of applications have to go to low income. There's those four. The second four are in a special review for property type, and 13 of them haven't completed their applications. Everybody else is in verification. There isn't anybody waiting.
I've got to go back to my question again. Okay, my house is two-thirds built. And I said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and try to go through the process. And I go to you, and finally it's okay. And then there'll be contractors, who else, environmentalists, whoever come down there. So we're looking 5 months before you start doing any work on the house.
That's a reasonable expectation.
2 or 3 months. Okay. When the, I don't know what he is, but whoever makes the assessment, say he comes in and say if I want tile on the floor, he said, all you get is linoleum. How does it work there? Or if I want it, I don't know, on the exterior, maybe I want it hardy board, and they come in and say, no, you get this, you know, the cheapest siding available. Is that the way it goes? Or is
no. So Harris County has what we call a minimum construction standards, and there it's not the super cheap thing that
everybody is describing. Yeah, well, you have a list of approved materials or something like that?
For types of materials, yes. Like as an example, it is not acceptable for kitchen cabinetry or any cabinetry for that matter in the home to be made out of particle board. It must be made out of plywood.
Yeah.
So that's a simple example of standards of quality that we're requiring in the program.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you this. Obviously, I don't have an SBA loan, but now I'm thinking about getting one.
let's talk about SBA and the math problem.
So as long as if I have an SBA loan, then under your program, I would be eligible maybe to be reimbursed?
Yes. So we've requested that the state consider a reimbursement program. And the reason we're requesting that is because we're required by federal statute to reimburse SBA as a federal funding source monies that have gone into the repairs of the recovering property. Okay? If you choose to cash in your retirement plan,
which I'm doing, go ahead.
I know where we're going. If you choose to cash in your retirement plan to pay for your repairs, instead of getting a loan from SBA, I cannot help you today.
Yeah.
If you choose instead to not cash in your retirement plan and you go get an SBA loan, I can.
Okay.
And I can't change that right now. The state, it's on the state's table whether or not reimbursement is an eligible activity. SBA is not optional, it's a federal requirement.
Because under that scenario, if reimbursement, if they allowed us to do reimbursement, you could complete your work and finish out your contract.
Yeah.
But you would still be eligible to apply for that reimbursement.
Yeah. And that's another thing, the permits run out after the year.
Right.
And all the permits issued will run out
right
before the 3 or 5 month time limit.
Yeah, I want to squash the SBA loan for the answer you just gave. We applied for SBA loan for the 3 or 5 month. Any insurance money we've got to come to paying the SBA loan off before we should do the repair. So we didn't make the SBA loan pay the interest on the money that we're going to get from the insurance company.
Oh,
so.
The insurance company exceeded what the SBA loan was going to give us, so we didn't get it.
Okay. So what you're describing is what we call the duplication of benefits. Okay. So when we are determining how much funds we can participate in the program for rebuilding your home, we look at how much money you got from insurances, and that includes your homeowner's insurance, your wind insurance, flood insurance, and whether or not you have SBA or any other funding sources that contributed to your project. So just working in round numbers, if you have $100,000 worth of damage and you have $50,000 in insurance and you went out and got an SBA loan for the $50,000 difference for your $100,000 rebuild, half from insurance, half from SBA, you can apply to us and we will look at the same math. Say you're in construction, you've spent your insurance money on your repairs, and you've spent half your SBA loan. So you've got a loan with SBA for $25,000. You haven't spent the other $25,000 yet. You still have $25,000 worth of work to do. We will put $50,000 into the project. We'll pay off your SBA loan and give you the deferred loan, which is a forgivable loan grant, for the other $25,000. So we will take out your SBA loan and finish your project.
No, but my understanding.
We didn't get the SBA loan because our insurance was more.
That's not how it works with this.
Well, it didn't for us anyway.
So it doesn't work that way. If you're not going to get $50,000 insurance money and $50,000 SBA also, when you get the insurance money, you have to pay it back to SBA for all that money.
You know, I'm speaking from someone that had both an insurance and an SBA loan, my household total cost $177,000 to rebuild. And insurance, it ended up, I got it about $145,000 on total. Because, you know, you've got your deductible, blah, blah, blah. And the balance is an SBA loan that I'm paying off every month. The only thing the SBA is that the insurance money had to be spent first, and so they didn't actually give me the $30,000 all in one shot. It was I literally have a binder this big of receipts. I had to show them $145,000 in receipts, which is a lot of Xerox. And then I would give them the $10,000 either from the contractor. Okay, this is what we're going to do, and then they would send $10,000 and they kind of pieced it along.
That's exactly it. So if you phoned us and applied for this program,
I did.
So which are you?
I haven't given a letter.
So then you're either one of the four. You're either one of the four, or you're getting your letter tomorrow because I went out in the mail today. So that is
contact SBA though.
Well, we're at a point where we're waiting on our final inspection, so we really don't know what to do because she's already said we're ineligible, but they are going to take it back to the state. So we don't really know.
And there's a big question mark as to whether the state is going to address yet.
Because we have used some of our funds for it.
And it's really unfortunate. You know, it's like we're calling it punishing the pioneers. It's terrible.
We filled out paperwork and you called us to come in for an appointment. And we've been stalling on coming in on this appointment.
Yes.
My understanding that after talking to one of the caseworkers and Valerie and everybody was calling us, that we're repairing our house ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the process of it. And we were told that I needed to bring in all the receipts from 08 and 09 and now 10 for all the repairs we've done on the house to date and everything we purchased to repair the house and all of this. And we were supposed to bring in all the insurance, whatever insurance we've gotten, and all the information as far as whatever income we have. And then you would make a determination if our how much more money we needed to finish or something. But I don't know how y'all would know. I mean, I can see if we were through and you wanted us to bring in all of what it cost us to bring our house back to normal. And then you deducted deducted insurance payment for that and you try to pay us the difference. But how do you figure it out? If I'm going to put all this stuff together, and bring it all into you, how would you know how much more it's going to cost us than our insurance to finish our house?
We won't know it at that appointment. But I'll let Vanessa finish. But we won't know.
I mean, I don't want to go through all this, and y'all get in there and y'all go,
that's the first step. But.
Okay, so I actually brought some handouts because I anticipated that these kinds of questions were going to come up. So the short answer is we talked about duplication of benefits. Okay, we talked about duplication benefits are the three insurances and SBA and any other funds that you've spent to repair your home. After we do verification for eligibility, ownership, that you own the home now, you're going to, and you own it now. Occupancy, that it's your primary residence. That as an owner, you're a U.S. citizen. Then we verify whether or not you're low income, because we need half of the money to go to low income families. We don't care whether or not you're low income, we just need to document you're on one side of the line or the other. And that's kind of the gift for the verification piece. Now, the duplication benefit side of it, we have hired certified inspectors who will come out and do a cost estimate of your home. They do two types of cost estimates. They do work that's already done based on an interview with you, which needs to be substantiated by receipts where possible. And then they do work yet to be completed that meet the county's minimum standards, the local code, the state code, and the federal requirements, whichever is more restrictive. We get a certified cost estimate from that. That's how we do the calculation to determine what your gap is between insurance and the funds you need to finish your home.
And does this person, when they're doing it, do they, for instance, say, well, he built cabinets, that's a 30-hour project, and that's $20 a bit, you know what I mean, getting the monetary credit for the
We
rent.
Use the Gulf Coast cost estimate book
okay.
for work completed.
Okay, because obviously they wouldn't have a receipt for
everybody's treated on the same playing field for estimate of work completed. Whether it's sweat equity or, you know, family members coming in to help, neighbors pulling together, however that works, everyone's treated the same. So countywide, when we say you have installed 15 lineal feet of cabinetry, the value of 15 lineal feet of cabinetry is X. Does that make sense?
You pay for driveways?
No. Foundation to finish structure only.
I have a question on
the expenses, overhangs.
Porches and overhangs count. It's attached to the structure.
Nobody to talk about that.
Yeah.
The things that bring our houses back, that they're not covered under flood, and it was, even though it was a wind event, it was a flood event, and so you're denied the ability to get your structure really back to zero.
Same thing here, basically.
You're saying from foundation to finish, it's just that one area when, in fact, you have walkways unless you want to walk through mud to get to your front door, back door, or any other part of your property. It's just one thing. I mean, I have decks that just disappeared, and I have to replace the sidewalks, stone, concrete, something. I mean, it's just one of a myriad of things, including increased cost of compliance to bring your house up to code currently because of the damage it was sustained. You have to repair it to make it code compliant. Does somebody come in and they say, okay, you know, yes, I see that you had to replace all your plumbing, your gas lines to the meter and all that.
When we calculate the duplication of benefits, the insurance funds that are associated for the non-structural components of your house are not included in your duplication or something. So say, for example, you get an insurance settlement and $50,000 of it's for your house. And $15,000 of it is insurance claims for damage to a bulkhead if you're on the water and damage to your fence and those kinds of things. That's why we need your itemized statement of your settlement. So we can look at line by line what the insurance is paying for. When we calculate duplication of benefit, we applied the insurance proceeds for the home associated with the scope of work you've already completed, and the balance of the money left that you haven't spent yet is applied to reducing your grant award. It's a complicated math problem, but we're up for the game.
Garages, are they part of it? Because the city has a code requirement for a two-car garage.
Yeah, we're
attached only, not attached.
Attached only.
Attached to the structure, not attached to the structure.
How do you deal with that in a VE zone, where we won't allow a detached structure when you're in the velocity zone for a VE plug?
You won't allow a detached, right?
Attached. They have to be elevated on piers. We'll
allow, that's true.
We won't even allow filter.
Right.
So,
right.
So yeah, when, you know, Calvin Victor is an example of that. He cannot have an attached garage unless he buys four more lots so he can put a ramp.
That's not talking about ramming yet.
So what was that? Four, like on my insurance, they even had to make a special note when the adjuster came out, because my garage isn't physically share a wall with the house main structure. What it has though is covered patios that are attached to the house and attached to a garage, and so it's considered an attached garage.
The pavement structure is attached by some virtue of either a fence overhang or something.
And he had to make a special bid because that was covered at a whatever higher percentage of insurance than it would be if it was a detached garage.
Correct.
So there are tricks.
What about a detached garage that is also have living space above it that is not covered?
So, single family residence with an attached garage, all costs are eligible for the program. If it was attached and now by local ordinance or code that it cannot be attached, we cannot participate in the cost of that.
Okay, but if I'm saying mine is a garage apartment that I'm living in that is not attached other than by virtue of a fence, which by insurance rights is a permanent structure, but by flood, it was absolutely nothing.
No. Duplexes are permitted, but not mother-in-law apartments in attached environments.
I've got a question about it. The cut point is like low and moderate income, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like 20,000. If you have a couple that if they make more than 20,000 a piece, they are in the upper income bracket.
For a family of four, the median area income is about 56,000. So you take 18% of that if you look at
that's with two kids.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple. But where I'm getting at is that
it doesn't lock you out of this program. It just
actually,
puts you
if,
in
if
a different
market. Is there a couple living together and both are going on unemployment? They exceed that 40 grand. You know, I'm just telling you this bottom line.
Yeah.
And that's really not even a good, you know, I imagine part of whoever came up with that cut point. But really what I'm asking now, if somebody makes over 60 or over 70 or 80, over 80,000, is that when they reach that point, you say, you must have a high income cut point where you say, we're not even considering them. It doesn't matter that their house is completely demolished. They only got one third of the amount of the value.
No. There's no economic differentiation between one or the other. We just need to know if you're on one side of the 80% number or the other side of the 80% number, so that when we spend the dollars on your property, we can tell HUD which side of the line the money went on, and that's the differentiation alone.
And just to let you know, the law that appropriated funds to the state for all disasters in 2008 had that in the law. So
yep.
We have that law, we have to report that 50% of it has to go to the law.
So then your income level does not disqualify you, or
no, it doesn't. The four things that I mentioned before: occupancy, ownership, citizenship,
age.
No. That was just to put you in place in line. If we got those 1,700 applications that we had hoped we had, we we had intended to divide up the applications by type so that we could process them in blocks of applications by type. So age and disability was a group that we had intended to be able to divide all of the application pool up. We haven't found that we needed to do that. We've released 100% of the low income and 100% of the severely damaged.
Now, I'm going to throw another thing at you.
No, answer
your question. This on income. Now, FEMA, I've applied to different people, and that's didn't go anywhere. SBA even turned me down. But I didn't give them another try. But recently, FEMA came around again, and they're evaluating my eligibility for the trailer. Now, in the past, they always asked for my gross income. They come around this time, they said, put your net income down, which, well, maybe not, maybe they shouldn't have, I don't know. But the real bottom line is there's a difference, okay, and it's a pretty good difference depending on what you're paying out, you know, for insurance and other things. So, but the income thing, the $40,000, the cut point, is that gross, I guess that is gross income, net?
It's with adjustments, but for the most part it's gross income.
Yeah.
There's a question over here coming from you.
Quick question. I don't know what you just asked. My mind was riddled. But about, okay, so insurance gave us money, but since our house is 95% damaged, our mortgage was called in. So I had to give that. They requested that I give that money to the mortgage. So does that still count against me as far as
it does not. Because it didn't go to the repair. It went to pay off the mortgage. So it doesn't count against you.
This is just a statement. And this kind of leads to where he went when he mentioned FEMA, FDA. I can't tell you in this town and others like us how many people basically suck weeks of our time out of this to be told nothing is going to be done for us because A, we own a TV or whatever some stupid qualifier was, and that's probably why we have 600 applications in there, because people don't want to go through weeks on weeks of all this paperwork to submit this stuff to be told no when we can be doing other much more productive things, because it doesn't sound very positive to me.
It's, you know, it's a difficult situation. And I thoroughly appreciate and understand, you know, your perspective. And I won't argue against it. All I can say is that this is a program. It's available. If it meets the nature of what your circumstances are, it's voluntary, please apply. If it doesn't, you know, I can't compel you to do so.
Yeah, I have a question about this proof of citizenship we have been through this. Okay, first I was told I had to apply a birth certificate. And I was born and raised in Florida, which tremendously. And I was told there's a location downtown Houston in a horrible location.
Scared place.
And then I was told the birth certificate is not required.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is it?
So, as a result of you and three other people, I went to Daphne with an administrative decision that said, if you can provide all of the other necessary documentation for identity, and you are receiving Social Security benefits for whatever reason, we will waive the requirement for a birth certificate.
So it's still required, but you fall under a waiver. So we're accepting
the documentation of
citizenship.
The four documentation elements that you've already provided meet that criteria. And
do you need a Willis rule?
Not above you anymore.
Do you need a Willis rule?
It's actually not far from that, because I met with Anita in the morning and I wrote up the administrative decision and it presented it to Daphne the next afternoon.
Daphne, I'd like to make a comment as well. You know, I would dream that at some point in this process, you're asked to give some evaluation back, because I understand it's a long pipeline and you're at one end.
Right.
But I would like at some point to communicate to the folks at the other end of the pipeline that in this community, this program has failed miserably, and the people that failed are not the people in this room. It's the people who have a house that they've walked off from, who are elderly and sold it for pennies on the dollar, because this process didn't provide them with any assistance in any timely, meaningful way. I mean, how many of these have you funded? How much construction have you done? How long has it been since the storm? And we have people on fixed income that are retirees that are in their 80s, and they are gone, and they're not coming back. And, you know, they were the most needy, and they, I'm not discounting anybody else's need, but they were amongst our most needy, met all the criteria in the world.
Absolutely. And yeah. Definitely, we will put a survey, a way to respond. We want to hear back from everybody because we can only make this better. I hate to say next time around because no one wants to have a next time around with something like ICE. But yes, it has to improve. If Harris County had had the ability to go out and start sooner than waiting on the state, we would already have construction underway. But we were waiting on the state contract, and not that I'm trying to blame anyone else, but something has to improve on time.
I understand.
I totally agree with you.
And you know, when the program first came out, Mayor and I attended meetings, and we were really interested in having as many of our residents apply for the program. But right up in front, again, I'm sure with anticipation of your 1,500, they were told of these hurdles in the process as far as income and age and disability, and that they were going to be at the end of the line as we went through this process. And they dropped out. They didn't sign up for the race, let alone make a lap. And so, you know, they're not in there. I mean, I'm sure that we have 300 people, half your numbers, right here in this community. We have 575 houses flooded.
Yes.
102 of them are gone. They're destroyed, going to be demolished. We have those numbers here, and we just can't get them in the program. And it's competing ends, you know. We talked about the FEMA, the timing, and this timing. You take the folks that have the ability to do some repairs, get something going, and you put them at the end of the line. You know, it just...
Yeah, there's no line at this point.
There's a huge disconnect. And I would like to figure out a way that we can get these folks that are in the room and the folks that aren't here tonight, how we can get them back on track and, I'm afraid you're going to have money that's going to go back that isn't going to get spent on the folks that need it the most just because these people couldn't hold their breath long enough. And I'd like to know how we can help these folks get in the pipeline and not get discouraged or feel like, you know, it's going to be more trouble than it's worth.
Because we're all back where we have to go to work every day. We can't spend all day over on buying a lane, you know, for days and weeks and months at a time.
Well, if you think it would help, I mean, we can have someone here. You can publicize dates and have the case manager here, willing here in the community. If that will help bring people out. I mean, it's still a process, and I wish I could make it, you know, more smooth and not having to bring as much paperwork. But if we can locate somebody here, we're willing to do that. We're willing to do whatever it takes to, you know, to let them know here. We'll help them out.
Okay, along those lines, in this community, because it's small, the environmental clearances are all going to be identical.
Yes.
Everyone's going to meet the FEMA requirements. There's no exceptions there. So those should all be done.
published 119 different locations here, LaPorte, all the way up the Bay Line. Because they're all in the floodplain.
Yeah.
We just went.
We did.
Whether you put an application in, we just went ahead and did your first application in anticipation and hope that you will continue on with the project. We paid out like $15,000 for a whole page ad notification.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
Yes.
And I can tell you, it didn't say anything.
Fulfilled the requirement. Exactly what the state wanted. I mean, it was
okay.
Broken. They approved.
So those are things that would late in the game would compress.
And that's exactly why we took the approach and listed every property in the floodplain that had an application in the system, whether they were in verification yet or not,
we publish them, and it costs $15,000, and I hope to pieces that every single one of them comes through verification and out the other end, because we've invested in their environmental review before they got to that stage. Just for exactly the comments that you're providing to try and reduce that time delay that's occurring. It's very difficult.
There are no wetlands in this community. And if there are wetlands, they've already been approved for being built on previously, and no one's going to.
Oh, I have Batchelds and the port and the whole bay line. Yeah. So I don't know exactly where y'all are or where the wetlands are. And the
so then your application came in after we pulled the data.
My application went in October 6th.
Really?
Yep. In fact,
because I was one of the, as soon as the mayor and administrator, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go, and actually, you know, all the things, like, okay, well, there's no way I'm going to qualify for it, but I figured, well, at least that way, if there are any questions, maybe I can answer if somebody else gets hung up on an application.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the cost estimator, I'm assuming.
Like the paint risk assessor or the cost assessor. None of the construction contractors have been even notified.
I'm not saying anything about construction.
Oh, okay. So it's one of our certified inspectors.
You need to be aware of. Okay. And then another contractor.
Before you go any further, the house has been demoed. There is nothing to look at except a pile of rubble.
We still have to go out and take a picture to verify there is no house.
Nothing to estimate from either. Unless you're going to measure the number of cubic yards.
Contractor number two called me on the phone and wanted to know if he could come out and do a paint lead analysis on my house. Now, I don't know what type of information that you're sending out that encourages you people. They have got my cell phone number to call me directly, which is okay, because they have my cell phone number. But this is a total waste of not only time, it is a total waste of money. And my question is, who's paying these people? Yeah. If this is grant money, is that some of that grant money that's been allocated to Harris County paying for this?
It does, and that's the W. You're correct. That's so much time. I don't understand that. That's why she has a home to look at.
We ordered the lead based paint risk assessment at the same time we ordered the work write up, and so we don't know that there's a property.
And so all these people that are doing all this work out here, that are contractors, subcontractors, and subcontractors. Their funding to pay for their time and mileage, I don't know how they're paid or whatever, comes out of the total grant money that is allocated.
Right, you're correct. They get charged.
They should be doing a lead assessment
on your home. Right, I totally agree with that. So the way that process works is when you finish your eligibility verification, we do what we call is we order a work write-up. Actually, I have exactly that process.
You know, I'm not so interested in the process because I know y'all are in the process business. Okay, is the information that you all transfer this out to the contract?
When we do the order,
clarify.
Yeah. When we do the order, we give them the property address, the mailing address that you provided to us, and the three phone numbers that you gave to us. So they have three different ways to get a hold of you, a way to send you a letter if they can't get a hold of you, and then the damage address. We also give them the year the home was built based. So there are two people that will call you. to schedule an appointment. The first person that's going to call you is going to be the person who's going to do your cost estimate. The second person is going to call you, if your home was built prior to 1978, based on the Harris County Appraisal District information, public domain information, based on that year built, if your home was 1977 or older, they will call to do a lead-based paint risk assessment. Two phone calls. Two different separate inspections. Your situation is a little different because your house is demoed and a lead-based paint risk assessment shouldn't have been ordered for your property. But in general, if the house is still standing, one person comes out and does cost estimating and the other person comes out and does the lead-based paint risk analysis.
I mean, how do you convey this information to the contractor, subcontractors, so they get their act together? I mean,
I'm still confused by this contractor, subcontractor thing, because it's just too...
Well, I don't know how many contractors you have handling what jobs, but to me, there's so many fire ants on the tile, you can't even see the fans, okay? And the fans are home, and that's what I'm saying, we're covered up with all of these contractors. They come out and want to do environmental, they want to do lead, they want to take pictures and stuff. One person down at Diana's Way could have taken all of this information. I could have supplied the photograph. You know, somebody can come out and take a picture. They don't just have to bring another contractor.
Well, they need it, but they can't. We can't, because otherwise... You're going to have a 1% dishonest who are going to take a picture of the
neighbor, the neighbor's lot.
Yeah. I mean,
but to answer your question, thanks for bringing that to our attention. We do need to coordinate communication better. And I've pointed out, Vanessa, we'll talk about that. There are two different contractors who do these. There's a cost estimating subcontracting company that's doing that, and there's a lead-based paint assessment company. So those are two different contractors working on this program doing two different types of assessments. There just needs to be better coordination communication from the HAC to those two different entities.
Yeah, one last point.
Now, point number two is, because of this kind of recovery program, I am between a rock and a hard spot. Okay, and I don't like being there. And it's because of the time factor that's involved. Shore Acres has got criteria, they have ordinances, that they feel that it's in the best interest of the community. Okay? Y'all have your guidelines. We need to get together so the homeowner, the property owner, knows exactly where they're at. And I'm not talking about necessarily the process of the paperwork, but I mean, they have got to establish deadlines based on probably the worst case scenario of people that feel like, you know, they can live in a trailer forever. I don't want to be in a trailer forever. I want to get my house rebuilt. I want to be able to have a house that I can call home. And I don't have a clue where I'm at. And Shore Acres has got deadlines that they want to adhere to, and then here it comes in October. That's way past the deadline that they're wanting the residents and property owners to abide by.
We're like close to 2 years in October. Two years.
You all tell me, as a property owner and homeowner, what am I supposed to do? I don't know. I really do not know.
One last question for me. Do you maintain a list of approved building contractors, or how does that happen?
We're in the middle of that process right now where we sent out a request for qualifications to contractors. They have very specific criteria of what they how they had to meet that. They had 24 contractors submit. 75 came to the meeting, 24 actually submitted, and we evaluated their proposals, and Harris County is looking at the final selection of, out of those 24, which ones will be the contractors in our program.
So Harris County makes the decision and who's an approved contractor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a follow-up question on that. So if somebody has demolished and it's going to be rebuilt, and the person qualifies, then Harris County just directly hires the contractor, because that's been hired the contractor?
No, not quite. For both the rehab the repair side of the shop and the reconstruction side of the shop. The contractors that I was just describing, those are the contractors that will be selected to bid on the project for the work. The contract is between, the construction contract is between the homeowner and the contractor. The homeowner has control, okay? Then the homeowner has a funding agreement with the county, okay? So it's two different kinds of agreements. The construction contract for the total scope of work, which includes the money you already have from insurances and those kinds of things, plus our money in the deal. And we have a contract with you for our money.
Now, I've also heard that Harris County designs the plant.
And that is not quite true either.
Okay, and that's what I wanted to confirm. Can you provide any additional information on that?
So the first step was to select qualified contractors. Mm-hmm. And then we have a separate request for proposal process. And this is the city you're familiar with, the proposal process. For repair properties, we take the cost estimates, the owner reviews the scope of work with us, make sure that, you know, substantially everything that meets the work needs to be done, they're listed. It goes out to all the contractors that are approved contractors in the pool to bid against. If you're demolishing your home and rebuilding it, or it's already demolished and you need to rebuild it, those same contractors are providing pre-priced floor plans that you can choose from in a range of square footages. Okay? So Harris County will participate. If you had a 1,600 square foot home before with three bedrooms and two bathrooms, we have a range of plans in the 1,600 square foot range with three bedrooms and two bathrooms, and you can select a plan from that group to rebuild your home. One of the things that we recently learned is that Shoreacres has the ordinance about the 1,800 square feet. That's going to create a difficult math problem for us, because we can't unfairly give someone an 1,800 square foot house when they had a 1,600 square foot house before.
Well, the bottom line is that to meet the Shoreacres code for 1,800 square feet, the homeowner would have to come up with that difference to cover that larger space.